Welcome to Let's Talk Land, weekly land education talk show devoted to learning about land and farms, buying and selling, and ownership, especially for the real estate agents and realtors. Learn from the experts. Free land education. Hi, my name's Lou Jewell. I'm an accredited land consultant, broker owner of United Country Real Estate, Land Pro, and Shadow. My Jack Russell's here with us today. Buying and selling homes, land, or farms in western Piedmont, North Carolina, and southern Virginia, just give us a shout. We'll help you out. Our office is at 3349 Cook School Road in Pilot Mountain, North Carolina, on Highway 52, exit 136, across from Foothills Hardware and Building Supply. We share office with Freedom Designs and Marketing for all your graphic needs. Our website is www.mylandpro.com, www.mylandpro.com. Our guest today is Carolyn Matthews. Welcome, Carolyn.
Hello, Lou. Glad to be here.
I wish you were.
Thanks for having me here. I always look forward to hearing what's the newest thing going on in land, and I know how much you know about all these subjects, so I'm delighted to be a guest on your show.
Well, I've been doing this almost 30 years, and believe it or not, I learn something every show, and that's what the beauty of it is. You can't learn it all. Land is a little four-letter word with a long tail. You take that tail and dissect it, and you know, you just take timber, or you take surveying, or you take easements, or you take any of these land issues, and some of the stuff we'll talk about today, government regulations, and I mean, it's a vocation in itself. So, I had a title, Chicago title, on last week, and never heard this. I know all the easements, but she said an easement is a contract. I never thought of it that way. So after all these years, you learn something new.
Well, you always do. And I remember when I first started law school and they told us the first day of contracts about the rule in Shelley's case. And they said, you'll probably never run into it, but it's something you need to know. And sure enough, I hadn't been in practice for about 6 months and I ran into the rule in Shelley's case, which is that if you inherit both a life estate and an entailed estate, they merge and become fee simple. Well, that's one of those things you just think you'll never encounter in this old English common law. But there's a lot of good common sense out there in common law, too, Lou.
Absolutely. Let me tell you a little bit. Let me introduce you and get a little bit about your background. You live and you were born in Columbia, South Carolina. You received a BA from Furman University. I used to run track. I was state champion in the 120 in high school, my junior and senior year. We participated at Furman University, one of the first carnivals, we called them, down there. Yeah, I loved it. I almost went to school there.
My alma mater.
Beautiful setting, right there in the foothills, just absolutely gorgeous campus. But I hadn't been there since the 60s, so I'm sure it's changed.
You need to go back and look, because I'm telling you, it's magnificent. I think it consistently wins one of the top 10 most beautiful campuses in the United States.
I would say it was that then. I'm sure it's even better now. And you earned a J.D. What's a J.D.?
J.D. is Juris Doctor. That's Latin for Law of Judges, I suppose. And nobody calls you that. And we don't get called doctor like Ph.D.s do, who get a Ph.D. in English or political science. But it's a Juris Doctor degree.
We need to change that.
I agree. I need to fight for that.
Yes, ma'am.
Who's my next cause?
But you also got a degree from University of South Carolina Law School. I've been on that campus, too, many years ago.
Yes.
And I'm not going to give the dates, okay?
No, I don't care.
All right, 78. There you go. But anyway, I'm a little older than you are. But anyway, you served as staff attorney for the South Carolina Supreme Court. That was quite a job there, I'm sure.
I was the first woman they ever hired.
Is that right?
So it was very exciting. That was back in the day, when it was a big deal to be a woman in law school and to get a job as a woman at the Supreme Court. So I was very honored to get that.
I'm sure you were. You were also Supreme Court for Justice George T. Gregory, Jr., and you were Assistant Attorney General of South Carolina, where you argued more than 80 cases solo in the South Carolina Supreme Court. Can't we get you up in Washington? Help us out up here a little bit.
I tell you, that would be quite an experience. I have submitted briefs to the U.S. Supreme Court, and the only time I really appear in front of them now is when I'm moving the admission of some lawyers to the bar up there. But probably the most interesting case that I argued was a case, Pee Wee Gaskins, the most notorious mass murderer in South Carolina history, a death penalty case. And I'm proud to say I won that one.
Wow, good for you. So I'm sure you had a good batting average there because you guys rate wins and losses, and I'm sure very proud of it.
We like wins and losses.
Yeah, you like the wins. You were also, prior to that, a partner Nelson Mullins, Raleigh, and Scarborough. Are they still around?
Oh, they're still around. They have approximately 800 lawyers now.
Oh, my God.
And the most famous of the partners there would be now Secretary of Education Dick Riley, who's also a Furman graduate and who was governor of the state. And he's one of the finest people I have ever known. And is in his 80s now. And
is he really?
Stopped for a moment.
Wow.
And his, it's a very large law firm with an international presence. And I learned a lot when I was there. Proud to be made a partner.
That was a good place to learn, wasn't it? And a lot of mentors there.
Very fortunate.
So now you practice law just as a sole practitioner. So you specialize in civil mediations, and you're serving as an expert witness of law.
Yep.
You're married to one of my best buddies, John A. McAllister, Jr.
I am.
And Ron is a fellow realtor and also a member of RLI and served as our national president a number of years ago. And he's a Citadel graduate, right?
He is.
And very proud of it.
Very proud of it.
And you have one daughter, Austin Adams Verner. Where does she live now?
She lives in Charleston. She practices law in Charleston also.
Oh, really?
Yes.
Wow. Pass it on down. You got a couple granddaughters. I'm sure they'll be lawyers too soon, right?
They're special. I don't know what they'll be. They'll just be happy, I hope.
That's okay. How old are they?
They're 8 and 6.
Oh, perfect age. Wow.
Fabulous. So very fortunate.
So you spoke in the topic of our show today. You were a guest speaker at the National Association of Realtors National Convention. That moves around the country. This year it was in Boston this month. You were invited by Russell Riggs, who I've had on this show. Russell is our head lobbyist for the National Association of Realtors for the RLI. But he invited you to come up, and you spoke before the NAR, National Association of Realtors, Senior Policy Representative and Advocacy Group. What is that?
Well, I actually spoke before the Land Use, Property Rights, and Environment.
I'm sorry.
On abusive process, and it's their group that is most involved in land within NAR, separate, of course, from RLI, which is a totally separate group, as you know. But anyway, I spoke to them on the same topic that we talked to you about abusive process in environmental litigation, a couple of case studies.
Perfect. And then I heard it was you knocked it out of the park is what I'm...
Well, I don't know about that. But, one thing you did mention in my bio was that while I was in private practice, the South Carolina General Assembly elects judges in straight-up vote of the House and Senate together. And I was elected an administrative law judge there and served for 15 years as an administrative law judge in South Carolina, ruling on all sorts of land issues, everything from taxation to ownership to some zoning issues to a lot of environmental penalties, environmental fines, appeals from the licensing boards of the state, including those for the Realtors Board, if there was any discipline by the board. So that was probably where I spent the most time with land issues. But after that, after retiring from that, I decided to have my own practice again. And I miss some of the attributes of the big law firm, but I don't miss the whole politics of the whole big law firm.
No, I'm sure it's very political, as everything is, and even more so today, which I try to stay away from, by the way.
I
understand. This is an international show, and I want to keep it pretty straightforward here. But so a lot of these things, and I've done over 60 rural subdivisions. I live in a little town of about 1,280 people called Pilot Mountain, or on the Andy Griffin Show, which is called Mount Pilot. Barney's always coming down to check out things in Mount Pilot or going to Raleigh. But we're between Winston-Salem and Mount Airy, or RFD from the Mayberry Shows, right on the foothills. We're just, I can drive 30 minutes and be on the Blue Ridge Parkway.
And magnificent part of the country.
It is. It's my family has over 900 acres that my great-grandfather and grandfather bought, 18 parcels, mostly farms, and back between 1909 and 1929 with 10 children, my grandfather. And every inch of that is still in the family, almost five generations.
How wonderful. Well, my mother's family is from Monroe, North Carolina, outside of Charlotte. And every time we crossed the border of North Carolina, she'd roll down the window and say, "I'm breathing some of God's air at last." And I still do that in her memory. So,
wow.
We have great fondness for North Carolina. And I do have relatives. Of course, Benjamin Smith, who was the colonial governor of North and South Carolina, is my, 11 times great-grandfather. And so I have lots of North Carolina.
You do?
For North Carolina, yes.
Yeah. I grew up in Charlotte but in my younger years, but I think it was 280,000 people when I left in 74. So
my goodness.
It's changed a little bit.
Oh, it certainly has. But I'm glad to know you're still up there keeping straight.
We're trying to.
Neighboring state.
Absolutely. So, you know, I'm going to quote something that you sent me. It says, "A vital component of many real estate developments is obtaining the required environmental permits from city, from county, from state, from federal agencies for issues involving water, air, wetlands, mitigation, and environmental impact. If these permits are challenged in the state or federal court, the results can be years of litigation delaying the project or costing hundreds of thousands of dollars. Environmental or other groups which threaten to litigate the permits unless collateral demands are met are committing the tort of abuse of process." So that's what we want to talk about today, if we can, some of the rights and so on and what's going on with them.
Exactly. And as I said, developers need to be aware that a lawsuit for abuse of process can be brought against such groups, and it can be raised as a counterclaim when necessary permits issued by the state or federal government are challenged in court. And if you're going to bring one of these suits, you do need to hire an expert on the law. And I've got a couple of cases in South Carolina that I've been involved in most recently that illustrate abuse of process in environmental challenges to state and federal permits.
Okay. Well, let's get into those in the next block, okay?
Okay.
Developers need to be aware that lawsuits of abuse and process can be brought against such groups and can be raised as a counterclaim when necessary permits issued by the state or federal government agencies are challenged in courts. And then you are going to talk about these couple of cases here. You know, like I said, I've developed over 60 rural subdivisions, and in this part of the world, as long as we stay 10 acres or more, we don't have to get any government involved, none. You just take it, break it up. Nothing about road requirements, you know, may have to get DOT address, you know, sight line to get the driveways in. But if you do less than that, of course, you have to go before the planning board, do the preliminaries, and then do all the work and spend all the money. And then eventually you get to the county commissioners. And at the beginning of that, usually you have the public hearing where all the neighbors come and go, yam, 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 yam. And then 2 years later, you finally get everything approved and signed off on, and you get to put a sign up on your lot and sell it for $15,000. You got over $500,000 in the ground. So it's I don't like developing that way. I like the luxury of keeping government as far away as I can. And,
completely. And you say in this neck of the woods, is that a statewide law that if it's 10 acres or under, that you don't have to get the permit?
It's different in different areas, like in Virginia, Southern Virginia, that I'm licensed in the state. You know, it's 2 acres in one county. It's 5 acres in another county. You know, and then you've got a minor subdivision, which is in one county I'm in. You can do up to 5 lots, no less than an acre, and just go to the planning board director with a preliminary, and they can sign off on it. Or in the other county, it's 4. So if I've got a 50-acre track with good road frontage, you know, I'll take advantage of those 5 or 4 lot subdivisions because I'm going to get more per acre and have building sites. And then I'll go internally and do the 10s, 12s, 15s, depending on topography and features and accessibility. Usually the old farm roads, I just improve them.
That sounds eminently logical. I wish we would adopt some of that.
So we're talking to my good friend Carolyn Matthews. This is Lou Jewell in Shadow, and let's talk land. Carolyn, let's talk about some of those case studies.
All right, I'll be glad to. The first thing I really wanted to say is that when people talk about abuse of process, a lot of times they don't really know what that means. And to quote the great humorist Will Rogers, he said, "The minute you read something that you can't understand, you can almost be sure it was drawn up by a lawyer." So that's
touché.
True. The idea of abuse of process, it is not set up by statute in most states. It's common law again.
Okay.
And I always think about it as Fred Flintstone. He picture Fred with a club in his hand getting ready to hit Barney on the head. And what he's doing is saying, basically, Barney, I want that woolly mammoth that you own over there for my herd. And if you don't give it to me, I'm going to go to court and challenge the swimming pool you're building in your backyard. And Barney says, well, but that woolly mammoth's got nothing to do with the swimming pool in my backyard. You don't care. He said, well, I know that, but I think this thing just might go extinct. And besides, I know I can tie you up for years, and you really want that swimming pool. Now, that may be an oversimplification.
I like it.
But what it says to me is that you got an ulterior purpose. Fred wants the woolly mammoth for his herd, or collateral advantage, something that he could not get by going to court over that swimming pool.
Right.
But he, in the course of negotiation, uses this thing he wants as a threat or a true club to coerce somebody, say, if you don't, I'm going to litigate it for the next 10 years and tie you up. And what we have seen just generally in South Carolina is that some of the environmental groups have used the threat of litigation as a club or a threat to get money, basically short money from the state.
Right.
And the most famous cases in South Carolina are the ones, for example, with Boeing. They came to the state and said, basically, you know, unless you give us $5 million to buy some property we would like to have, we're going to tie this up in the state court and federal court for years, and we're not going to sign off on anything. And it's basically ransom, and the state paid that. They bought 13,000 acres, $4.7 million in mitigation for Boeing. And then there was the case of Volvo, which is just now being built along Interstate 26, almost in Charleston, South Carolina. The environmental groups were interested in some acreage in the Francis Bison Forest and Four Hole Swamp. We got some great names here.
You do.
And the Blackwater River. They were interested in the birds and the swamp.
Of course.
Well, the Commerce Department says to them, look, Volvo, this land where we're going to put the new plant for Volvo, it's got nothing. It's got no endangered species. We've had a bunch of timber companies who have degraded the land using it for a tree farm. There's nothing there. And they said, well, that's okay. Either you give us $19 million this time, or we'll tie this thing up in court forever.
Wow.
So the $19 million was coughed up, and they bought 2,500 acres to avoid litigation. So that was part of the $200 million incentive that the state of South Carolina used, and there's a lot of debate about that state using tax breaks and other things to get industry to locate here. But,
right.
But those are the really big cases.
So Barney won, huh?
Yeah.
Good old Barney.
And so there was no litigation on any of those permits. And as you know, you have to get permits for air, for water, for land. You have to get permits from the state, from the federal government to build all these things. And if no one challenges them at a public hearing or in court, the whole process moves a lot faster. A lot less money is spent on litigation. But the cases I was involved in, the first one was in Horry County, which is our grand strand in South Carolina, our beach. There was a road that was 5 miles long. It was already there, dirt road. They wanted to pave it and make it four lanes. It was an access road to get people from a neighborhood to Grand Strand Medical Center and get primarily for access emergency vehicles. The money had been voted on in a referendum in 2006, and so the Horry County folks sat down with the Department of Natural Resources people, and they had an agreement about this road. Part of it included fencing for black bears, and at the time, there were a lot of black bears around there.
One of them wasn't named Yogi, was it?
Wasn't where? I'm sorry.
One of them wasn't named Yogi, was it?
Oh, I think Yogi's brown bear.
Then it was Smokey.
Up.
It was Smokey the bear, not Yogi the bear.
Smokey T. Bear. Smokey T. Bear is very important. I guess he's a brown bear. But anyway, the black bears were living around there, so they talked about doing things to accommodate us. Well, in 2009, I don't know if you remember, there were some very severe forest fires all up and down the Grand Strand. And the bears moved over the state line to North Carolina.
Welcome.
So you got the black bears now.
All right. We love black bears.
Okay, good. Well, black bears have moved up the road. They are not stupid when a fire comes. So there was no need to put the flare for it. Well, when the environmental group got together with Horry County, they got in a room with the county council chairman and basically said, look, we still want bear tunnels, and we would like $1.5 million to purchase an easement for some property that has nothing whatsoever to do with this property. And if you don't, we're going to tie you up in court for the next probably 5 to 10 years. Well, we got an affidavit from the head of county council and held on to that, but they still went to state court. And as you know, and as any smart lawyer or anybody who's dealt with land and development, you can always come up with some reason to challenge a permit.
Oh, sure.
I mean, it doesn't matter whether you want to say it's arbitrary or capricious that they even entered it. You can just say, oh, it's going to harm, and make up a species that you think may have been seen within 100 miles of the place. You can say it's going to interfere with your enjoyment of the surrounding areas. There's always a reason to challenge a permit. But one of the things that makes this case such a good one for abuse of process, and they did file an abuse of process claim in federal court and prevailed, is that when what they asked for in the negotiation, that $1.5 million and the bear tunnel, they could not have gotten it to court, then it's almost by definition a collateral objective,
okay.
Which is one of the elements of the abuse process. I mean, if they were asking for something something else, they might not be in this position. But the fact is, if you're asking for something you could never get in the court, and the courts of South Carolina and state courts, nor the federal courts, have the authority to order somebody to pay money to a conservation group to buy some good land for conservation that has nothing to do with this project.
Interesting.
And I don't know if you've encountered that in North Carolina.
I'm sure we do. I can't state something, but I'd say that's probably national.
Yes, I think it is national.
You know,
and I think a lot of times it's worth it if you look at the cost of litigation and go, okay, $1.5 million versus 10 years, okay? Fine, time value money, here's your money, go away.
Right.
But in this case, they did not. And so the group filed at the Administrative Law Court, where I used to be a judge, and they brought up every issue you could possibly bring up. They lost on every issue that they brought up.
So, sounds like the Ninth Circuit out west.
Yeah. And then they filed in federal court. So they said, well, if we can't win in state court, we'll file in federal court that there's a declaratory judgment, and we're going to try to stop these people from having an injunction against them. Well, again, in federal court, they didn't seek payment of money, nor did they ask any other areas be set aside for wildlife conservation, because there's no provision for that in the state or federal regs. Because I sat down and read every one of the federal regs, Clean Water Act, under the NEPA, under the state and federal administrative procedures act. There's just nothing that says we, the court, can order you to pay money to set aside something for conservation easement somewhere else.
Right.
Because you don't like this permit.
Did you have to use eye drops? That's a lot of reading. Hey, by the way, part of that petition for the bears creating that corridor, were they going to give written instructions for the bears so they knew where
definitely
it was and signage so they could find it?
Yeah. And here's the deal. You build a tunnel, you know, bears just may not go through it.
Okay.
You know, one tunnel, they don't like the looks of it, it's over with.
Might get a few deer.
Exactly. But finally, in the federal court, my client filed an abuse of process action against them. And they came to me and said, would you write an expert witness report? Well, I had never reviewed this issue and never looked at it. And they said, well, we want you because of your resume, because we think we can get qualified as an expert on the law.
Right.
And I filed this thing, 12 pages. I was taught, when I worked at the Supreme Court, one thing I learned from my Supreme Court justices was which 10 pages they want me to read. You know, a lot of lawyers will file these 100-page wonders.
Sure.
Nobody's going to read it. They ain't going to get read. So, anyway, I made a very short report, and I filed it on one day, and the environmental groups came back and settled this case the next day. Now, I'm not saying I'm some kind of genius, I'm just saying that this was the first time, to my knowledge, that anyone had actually employed an expert witness on the law.
Interesting.
On the law, yeah, not on, you know, the environmental impact,
sure,
or maybe how it's going to affect the value of the land or whatever, but just on the law. And I think it scared them.
That's why we love you.
It's pretty fast. So they say that was a very interesting case. And Orange County's got a lot of things like that.
Yeah.
But, you know, the things that you just need to be aware of. That's one thing I love about the law, that you kind of feel like there's certain things people just can't do to you if you're aware of being out there. And that's what interests me about abuse of property. And I don't mean to say that the environmental groups don't do some really good and wonderful things, because they do. And I'm glad they're out there. And, you know, if they hired me and I thought they had a good case, I'd be glad to help them too. But I think this shaking down of people to get something else you want is just wrong. Not to mention the illegal, it's just wrong. So
well, that happens not only because we're talking about land and land issues, but that's just life. I mean, divorces, I mean, any type of tort, you know, car wreck. Rodney had a restaurant burned down 4 years ago, and he's still fighting with the insurance company. He can't even touch anything on the property. Been to court.
Oh,
court.
No.
We need to get you up here,
Rodney.
And he'll win. Rodney, I got you a winner right here.
Rodney, I am so sorry. I mean, that's, and it's what makes me the saddest about law. And when you have to tell someone that you have a situation for which the law just has no remedy. We got nothing for
you.
So I guess it must be like the doctor telling somebody, I can't fix this, and we got nothing out there. But that's one reason. The other thing I do is a civil mediation, and I enjoy that because it gets rid of cases so much faster.
Absolutely.
Brings everybody to the table as an equal, not some big judge sitting down up there with a gavel at the top and telling you can't say that and you can say this. That's why I like mediation, because it resolves things a lot earlier.
He's been there twice and didn't get anywhere.
Oh no! I'm so sorry.
It just costs money and nothing happens.
Well, it's why so many people walk away from really valid lawsuits, because they know they'll pursue it for 5 years and spend several hundred thousand dollars, and at the end, you know, they don't really get what they thought in the first place. So but we're trying. You know, nobody likes lawyers until they have one that's good. So.
Yeah, that's right.
But anyway, I've been real interested in this whole area of abuse of process, because I think it has a chance to do some good.
Absolutely.
And then I was going to mention this other case, maybe.
We're going to do that in the next block, if that's okay.
Sure.
So we're talking with Carolyn Matthews, our guest today. This is Lou Jewell. Let's Talk Land.
All right, and now I'd like to go into the second case in which I was involved. Oh, do you need to introduce me again?
No, you're fine. Keep going.
Okay.
We all know you now.
Well, oh, dear. All right, well, the case that I was involved in, the second one, had to do with a saltwater mitigation bank. And I had never heard of a saltwater mitigation bank before, didn't know there was such an animal, but this was the first one in South Carolina. And the person who started it was called South Coast Mitigation Bank, and they bought some land down on the Georgia-South Carolina border in Jasper County, and looked at it and said it was some old rice fields that had been used for hundreds of years as rice fields, and then they've been used about past 80 as duck hunting clubs. So they had these old trunk lines and earthen dams, and they were controlling water. Very expensive and difficult to maintain. And since there wasn't a saltwater mitigation bank in South Carolina, so if anybody damaged anything when they were developing along the coast, of course you have to mitigate for loss of saltwater.
Just like wetland mitigation.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely. And everybody had been going to Georgia to buy these, as far as I know. And there may be some
credits.
Do you know if any in North Carolina?
I think there is. I think there is.
Well, I can understand that we first heard about mitigation banks at all, my husband and I did, at an RLI land conference years ago.
There you go, the best of the best.
Really? And what they heard about was a stream mitigation bank, and that if you're protecting a particular species and you jump through all the hoops and do everything the Army Corps and everybody else wants you to do, and all the state agencies, that you can sell three running feet basically for every foot of the stream that you can surf. And, I mean, you can make an enormous amount of money.
Yeah, 3-to-1 ratio, yeah.
And you still own the land and the stream.
Sure.
So it's a win-win situation. But I had never heard of that song.
Yeah, Mark Selinger, I had him on as a guest. He owns the Swamp School. And actually, he was one of our guest speakers in Fort Wayne, Texas, years ago at our land conference, and I think was a hit. And he covers about 17 states, and he actually had created a CE class, elective class, that I took 6 or 7 years ago. That's when I met him on wetland mitigation. And I've had several situations where I've had to call him and bring him in because I've observed, and then he verified, and, you know, it was... put a little bit more money in my seller's pocket, or buyer's pocket in one case, and because one guy didn't want to mitigate, so he sold the property, and we reinduced him to the new buyer, and he went forward and got the credits.
Wonderful. That is a great success.
But Mark is a super guy, and what he does is his school and everything. It's the Swamp School in Raleigh. But anyway, let's continue.
Really? No, well, what my client did was look at some land, this old duck hunting club land in the rice fields, and say, yeah, this would be a perfect place for saltwater mitigation. And since there were no in-state saltwater mitigation bank at the time, he said, well, you know, there's nothing in-state when somebody has to fill or alter some existing salt marsh well. So the credits can sell for up to $60,000 a piece.
Wow, that's strong.
I know in Florida. And I don't know how much they're selling for in South Carolina right now because this thing finally got off the ground. But they were awarded 2,500 credits from the Army Corps. And so if you do the math there, as they say, you come up with $150 million ultimately. So it's worth spending years and lots of money to buy the land and go jump through all the hoops of the federal and state government.
Exactly.
Well, anyway, so they knew that the port deepening in Charleston and Savannah was going on, and they were going to need some of the saltwater mitigation credit, some in-kind mitigation. And some South Carolina brokers, and I won't mention any names, had been making commissions off referring developers to these other saltwater banks.
I think I know who they are.
So good for them. But in November 2009, my people contracted the purchase of about a 700-acre tract, and they applied to the Corps of Engineers for the mitigation banking permit. And they got the whole, they call it an interagency review team together, which I'm sure y'all are familiar with. I mean, it had the Corps of Engineers, the National Marine Fisheries Service, Department of Natural Resources, South Carolina, the Office of Coastal Resource Management, South Carolina's Department of Health and Education. Nobody objected. So they closed the sale in December 2009. So they do a baseline assessment. They put test wells out, phase one environmental. They draft their mitigation banking instrument, submit it in November 2010. Then they have public hearings until 2012. So two realtors asked to meet with their environmental consultant on the project. And in 2012, they demanded, you got to either set aside half of this area in freshwater wetlands, or we're going to challenge you in state federal court.
Right.
And they said, well, you know, and if they were just complaining about the size of the project and it was somehow detrimental to the environment, that's one thing. Well, they just didn't want the competition with the people that were already making money.
Right.
And the state was looking at setting up its own bank and making money off that. Well, our people said no, and they renewed their threat to file suit unless they maintained half the acreage as what? Freshwater. Well, here's the deal. When you got these old trunk lines and these old earthen dams and stuff, even if you wanted to avoid litigation by agreeing to maintain half of it in freshwater, that's an affirmative thing you got to do. You got to, you know, keep building up those dams. You got to keep rebuilding those wooden the wooden trunk lines and everything. And it's very, very expensive to maintain. So it's just not like you're deeding it to somebody.
Sure.
They're asking for affirmative act. Well, they came to me and I said, look, I don't think they could get that relief, i.e. setting half of it aside as freshwater wetlands, under state or federal court. So the people went to state court, and they appealed to the administrative law court, where I used to be a judge. Okay. And they went in there and tried to lift the state so they could proceed. They said, look, we've already invested $3.8 million on the land purchase. in the permit process. You know, we've got people who didn't object to this. None of the interagency review team objected. The Corps has reviewed this thing for 40 months before it approves our mite mitigation plan. And we're only moving 1/10 of an acre out of 69,000 acres in the whole state. This is 1.01% of all the acres.
Good gracious.
Counted. I mean, we are having virtually no impact.
That's absurd.
It was absurd. But then the environmental group withdrew that challenge, and they went to federal court, and they asked for the same thing. They want half of it set aside. Well, they lost in federal court. Well, so South Coast filed this abusive process claim against them. They'd won at the federal district court. Then the people appealed to the Court of Appeals, at the Fourth Circuit Court of Appeals, and the environment was lost at every juncture.
Thank goodness.
Yeah. And part of it was that the fact could not have been any clearer in this instance.
Sure.
Because when both my clients, the people that want to start the mitigation bank, and the environmental groups would do their testing for salinity, the water inside the so-called freshwater impoundment was already more saline than the back river, which is right outside there. So, I mean, it was almost a joke that they spent this much time and money on this litigation. So,
Carolyn, let me ask you a question here. This came to mind.
Yeah.
The new federal regulations that have been reenacted in this current Congress, is that affecting any of this? Is that relaxing any of this stuff, or is that something totally different?
You know, I honestly have not looked at the new federal regulations. To my knowledge, they do not change this particular situation.
Okay.
But I would have to look at that a little further and get back to you.
Right. Because I know they were relaxing a lot of these environmental requirements and so on that was just like tying people up and, you know, holding progress.
I certainly hope so. And the next time I'm asked to be an expert on one of these, I'll certainly look at the new stuff and see what applies. But we were kind of stuck with what we had at the time. But I know Russell mentioned at the meeting that they were looking again at some more of the wetlands regulations,
right,
hoping to get some more relaxation of those with the current administration and the next Congress.
Exactly.
So yeah. I'll be very interested to see what happens.
Me too. It affects everybody.
It does. And I know when I did my expert witness report and I turned it in, and then they decided to depose me. Well, to tell you the truth, even though I like talk, I've never been deposed.
You've never been deposed?
No.
Well.
And under oath, it's just different. And as you know,
that's interesting.
And in fact, one thing when I was a judge, I liked when I had people under oath. I had a plastic surgeon under oath once, and I said, "Look, as long as I got you under oath, if I come see you, can you make me look like Christy Brinkley?" And you know what he said? He said, "Oh, Judge, you're already pretty Christy Brinkley." I'm like, "Oh, darling, yes, we Southerners love a good." We won't say he was not telling exactly the truth, but we'll just say he was embellishing. Anyway, so I sent him my expert witness report, and I said basically what they're asking for is abusive process.
Right.
But here's what I was shocked about. First of all, my little report had about 12 pages of text in it. They deposed me for 2 days. Now, I don't know what they asked me. They asked me everything about every billing thing in there, everything I thought about environmental groups, things that had nothing to do with what was in my report. It was a classic case of lawyers billing hours to bill a client.
Sounds like it.
Insurance company.
Yeah.
These environmental groups have insurance now, okay? Anyway, one that they asked me that I thought was interesting, they seem to have a mindset that if we're doing something good for the environment, any action we take is acceptable. And let me read you this from my deposition.
Please.
This is from my deposition. Somebody said, threatening to kill the Boeing deal unless the state set aside $5 million. He said, "Do you know where the league got $5 million?" I said, "Well, yes, I know. Governor Sanford said something about an environmental fund that went into there." And he said, "What do you think is the problem?" I said, "Well, it would be that threatening litigation just to get some money in properly, to me, is a pure case of abusive process." And he said, "Do you have any idea what the league did?" He said, "Do you know they would have used it for the good of the environment?" And I said, "Well, if they used it for the good of the environment, that would be the end justifies the means. I don't think it does. Then they said, but if so, if the league got in a negotiation with someone and put it to good use of purpose environment, you still have criticism of that? And I said, I'm not here to criticize. I'm only here to assess whether certain facts constitute the sort of abusive process. Whether anybody brings that action, whether it goes to fruition, another matter. But yes, it causes abusive process. Yes, I said that situational action, that's the end justifies the means. And that really shocked me that they had that.
Unbelievable.
That they were so blatant about it.
Yeah,
I mean,
sure.
They wanted to kind of, you know, walk around it and dance around it. But it reminds me of what Mark Twain said about if you laid all the laws end to end, there would be no end. And he also said, a reputable lawyer will advise you to keep out of the law, make the best of a foolish bargain, and not get caught again.
Touche.
And I think Mark Twain also said, because Johnny, my husband, has a t-shirt.
Right.
He got it at one of the RLR conferences. It says, buy land. They're not making any more of it.
That's so true.
Mark
except
Twain, he was a good Southern.
Except a little bit in Hawaii and a little bit around the planet with these volcanoes. It just takes a long time.
It really does. But anyway, the way this case went was they settled this case. And they settled this case where my client got all of their litigation fees paid.
Good.
And not just that, the environmental group agreed not to ever disparage their saltwater mitigation bank again with either regulators or with any potential purchasers. To try to
That's strong.
Help. So that was pretty big.
Absolutely.
But anyway, that one went away, and so I'm happy for them. But the takeaway out of this whole thing is you got people out there, developers, to deal with in-kind mitigation, freshlands, wetlands, whatever, to me is if you know you need state and federal permits, then carefully try to see what these folks are demanding and be aware that you have this tool in your toolbox of telling them, you proceed with this and you would very likely be committing abuse of process and that you're aware that of what they're doing.
Right. That's good. That's good advice. Good advice.
But I've seen it not just in the environmental area. There's a case down in Charleston right now where a developer wants to build a hotel on East Bay Street. Charleston's already overrun with hotels, but he's got a permit to build another one. He did not buy the land from somebody who wanted to sell him some overpriced land across the street. Well, that person who had the overpriced land to sell has filed as a zoning challenge, and he's trying to force the hotel developer to buy his property.
Sure.
So it doesn't necessarily have the environmental. It can be a pure zoning matter or a historical commission that appeal before, or an archaeological, or whoever. Architectural, for that matter, and just tie people up. But nonetheless, that you still can have a completed tort of abuse process, even if you don't go to a court of law and you just go to one of these commissions or whatever that's got to put a rubber stamp on.
So you know what I say to that?
What?
No amount of planning will ever replace dumb luck.
Isn't that the truth? Build it at night fast.
Exactly. Wow.
But that's been my experience with it, and I've been intrigued by the whole concept because, frankly, I had heard of this in law school.
Sure.
But when they call me and says they want to be an expert on abuse process and his voice, what I know
that
about
was
that,
interesting.
The point of a pen was room to spare.
Yeah, that was a career.
What do you want me to do?
That was a career star.
Yeah.
Unbelievable. You know, I teach the Land 101 class for Realtors Land Institute. I've been doing it since 2003 around the country.
Bless you for doing it.
And I enjoy it so much. And I also have a four-hour class for the state of North Carolina that I wrote and developed. And I think I'm the only land instructor with the only land course in the state. And I think I'm the only one other than RLI classes in the country, which is kind of strange.
Well, that's wonderful, Lou. That's a real gift.
Thank you.
And
that's the purpose of this radio show, too. It's we don't get land education that much when we go to real estate school. And there's just so many issues. I mean, I've done 49 shows, and each one of them is a separate issue that relates to land. And, I can do 49 more and not cover the same topic. So
you need to write a book. Sure.
Well, you can help me.
I'd love to.
We'll take the scripts of my shows and create one. I give this away. I pay to do this. And but I'm just trying to help the public, especially, and help our fellow realtors, too. you know, in our preamble code of ethics, which is over 100 years old, by the way. We're the second oldest organization in the country with self-policing. But our preamble, which I'd like to read, if I may, kind of says it all about what we're talking about. It says, under all is the land. Upon its wise utilization and widely associated ownership depends on the survival and the growth of free institutions and of our civilization. Realtors should recognize that the interests in the nation and its citizens require the highest and best use of land and the widest distribution of land ownership. They require the creation of adequate housing and building and fractioning cities and development of productive industries and farms and preservation of the healthful environment. And that's what we as realtors are charged with. But unfortunately, we don't have the education so our realtors understand what this really means.
I do know, like at the Land University, the next one I believe is March 3rd in Albuquerque.
Yes.
This y'all are consistently trying to remedy that and continuing to get education, and if you require continued education, specialized education of the land.
So. Right. In that Land 101 class, we get into a little bit about developing, and we talk about our subject today, and you get involved in these issues, and we call it home cooking. where you bring the experts in locally. You don't bring in, say, in South Carolina, high-powered attorneys from New York when you're dealing with local issues. You want to use local people, and so we call that home cooking.
I like some home cooking occasionally because it seems to me, I know when I was a judge, it seems that hospital experts on statistics were always from Michigan. And, you kind of were discounted when they're from Michigan. I don't know why.
Don't know.
But anyway, I'm always interested to hear anyone who's an expert on whatever subject they're interested in, whatever they've devoted their lives to. But I had never really thought about having an expert on the law. And there's a good deal of case law that says you can't have an expert on the law testify at a trial if it will invade the province of the judge or jury. But my contention is, and it's been my experience, that if you go ahead and get an expert early on in the litigation, then you can scare people enough that they'll settle before the litigation.
Yeah. Go to mediation and get it over with.
Yeah. That they see that their case looks really weak or whatever.
Sure.
So.
With about 9 minutes left, give me three takeaway points if we want our audience that's about our topic today, and maybe something we haven't even discussed yet. But in your opinion, what are the three most important things that we can pass on?
Well, the three most important things are, first of all, I think that it is extraordinarily complex for all of you realtors that are involved in development, whether it is of a subdivision or saltwater mitigation bank or anything, that there are a multiplicity of issues that have to be addressed at the state and federal level. And each one of those issues can leave you open to criticism, to litigation, and makes the place even more fraught with peril in development. So my hat goes off to people who are gutsy enough to get out there and go through this landmine of developing. Secondly, I think that you have to be aware of your legal rights when you are a realtor, and you have to be aware of, as I said, things can be used as a sword and a shield. This abusive process court can be very helpful in litigating. You can bring some cases to a speedier conclusion, and you can actually get some resolution in getting some of the environmental groups to a reasonable place, I believe.
Right.
And thirdly is that, if you're going to fight the fight, don't do it unarmed. Get somebody who's an expert to help you do it. And that's classic stuff that you realtors always tell everybody, too. I mean, don't go out and sell your house by yourself, okay? Get somebody who's an expert. If you're going to be in litigation and you know it, get yourself a lawyer who's an expert on the law.
And not someone with training wheels.
So those would be my three takeaways, and those are extraordinarily long, but long-winded today.
So let's wrap this up here for a little bit more. What else can we cover for you?
Yeah. Well, I would just say I like being a lawyer, and I like the interaction with realtors. And I will say I seldom meet a realtor who is not a highly intelligent and ethical person and who is not concerned with both increasing their business but doing the right thing and getting your clients to behave ethically and to trust you, because your repeat business and your success as a realtor depends on that.
So, exactly. That's my philosophy. I love helping people, and it's not about the money. I work for the big guy upstairs, but you know, I just love helping people and through situations and helping them understand whether I make any money or not. That's not the issue.
I love problem solving.
Yeah, and I find that pretty much we have such a unique industry because that's our job. Is, you know, everything starts with I have a problem. Carolyn, I got a problem. I need to buy something. Carolyn,
yeah,
I have a problem. I need to sell something. So the relationship starts out with the words, I have a problem. And if you take on the assignment, you know, you carry them through whatever it is you carry them through, whether it's a small issue or a complicated issue like some of the case studies you were talking about, until you resolve the problem. And then you get paid, hopefully. So,
you know. One thing you have brought up that I think is something I'm always interested in, and that people who are truly intellectually curious are always interested in, and that's lifelong learning. And I think when you stop learning, you die.
Oh, totally.
I mean, I guess I am, and you are also some of the last of the Renaissance people. I mean, if I had, would tell it all day, I had to sit at a computer desk and write software, they might as well just, excuse me.
Sure.
But that's just because it doesn't appeal to me. I'm sure somebody who understands all the intricacies of it loves it. But, I mean, I am interested in history, philosophy, religion, art, architecture, painting. It doesn't matter. I mean, and especially someone who's an expert in their field, I'm fascinated by it.
Absolutely.
And I love learning about all those things.
You never cannot. Does not.
I hope I will always continue.
Well, you will. We all do. And thank God for you and others like you.
Exactly.
So, Shadow, what do you think, huh? Yeah, you ready to go outside and chase critters, aren't you? There's more critters around this building.
I know, like we really say critters, and I love it.
Yeah, we're off the road and. About
I had a former mother-in-law who used to say varmint, and yeah. I don't think I've heard anybody say varmint in years.
I don't think I have either. Shout if I said varmint, would you know what it is? She's shaking
go
her head.
Varmint.
She's shaking her head no. But
well,
we have a lot of fun, and you know, it's such a great business to be in, and it's one of those businesses that there's no age, you know, you can do it till you can't walk anymore, can't talk anymore.
Exactly. And I'm proud to know all of you realtors. I'm proud to be married to one. And looking forward to going to the Realtors Land Institute Conference. In
Albuquerque. We'll be there
I've
in
never
March.
Been there, and I tell my husband because we're not going to leave unless we also go to Sedona and some of the beautiful places around there that I've never visited.
We do pick some really fascinating places, don't we?
You do. Good day. And I know you're going to have another continuing education program in Charleston this summer, in July. Which
yeah, we are. I'll be teaching it. Yeah, I'm going to do one in Asheville. Don't have dates yet. But we'll be doing one in Charleston, which I love, one of my favorite cities in the world.
Yes, we'll have some good cities.
Yeah, and you guys got to help me out and help me fill up the room. Yeah, Johnny's got some good ideas of doing some off-site stuff that should be of interest, and we'll make it a good time. And by the way, you don't have to be a real estate agent or a realtor to take these classes.
I know. That's how I found out, like I said, the mitigation course.
Yeah.
So, yeah, love to have, I'm sure you'd love to have any non-realtors in support.
Anyone that wants to learn, you know, in just about every class I've taught since 2003, at least one person might be an architect, it might be a banker, a landowner, maybe inherited land, don't know what to do with it, or someone that's interested in investing in land and want to learn what we know to help them move forward. So, it's always open, and our website is www.rliland, Realtors Land Institute, land.com, rliland.com, and you can find an ALC like myself and Johnny. I think there's 518 of us, the last count I heard, in the nation, and there's about 1,300 of us that are members of the Realtors Land Institute. So if you're looking to buy or sell, you want an expert. Someone that has knowledge, because land can be, as they put up on the chart in school, for the real estate school, says land is the most complicated of all real estate transactions. But then then you ask the instructor, well, what does that mean? They say, well, I don't know, because they haven't been trained either. So it's a vicious cycle. But
well, you're working on it. You're chipping away at it, Lou.
We are, with all and all of us, and we're getting there. Rodney? Okay. Check me out here. Okay. So we got about 3 minutes left. If somebody wants to get in touch with you, and what I do, Carolyn, is I put our shows, like I said, on the letstalkland.net website, and I just put your email address. I won't put your phone number. And if anyone has questions, I hope you'll address them and help people to continue to learn.
Be delighted to.
Yeah.
Just put that on there, and I'd be glad to talk to anybody that needs any consultation or just wants to talk. And hope to see some of these folks in Albuquerque in March. That'll be fun.
Yeah, I think we're going to set a record. Last year we were in Nashville, which was the largest attended and most profitable, because it's about, you know, we're a nonprofit, so we got to create money. And so they're expecting this one to be even larger, I think. With that setting out there, it's supposed to be one of the top resorts in that state.
Yeah, it has like 5 or 6 separate restaurants on campus, so we'll have to get together for dinner or something while you're out there.
You buying?
Yeah.
Huh? Okay. We'll make Johnny buy.
We have it, yeah.
But. We'll get Johnny to buy.
Well, it's just all plastic anyway. You don't have to pay those things. You just send $10 a month.
That's right.
Would that were the truth. But I thank you so much for letting me come.
No, you've been the perfect guest, and this is so important. Something that I've been wanting to have someone like yourself, and you were the perfect guest for us today. To guide us through this, and there's so much more to what we talked about. You know, as you know, we could probably do a 1-year show and still not cover it. You know, there's just so much to it. But anything we can do to help folks stimulate their thoughts or give them an idea before they jump into the cesspool, you know, that's what this is all about. So,
exactly right. Thank you for doing what you do.
Yeah, Carolyn, just give us your email address and your phone number if you'd like, so people get in touch with you.
Yeah, my email address is my name, Carolyn, Carolyn, Cason, Cason, Matthews, Matthews, @gmail.com. And then my address is 420 Aiken, Aiken. Hunt, HUNT, Circle, that's Columbia, South Carolina, 29223.
Perfect.
I want to hear from anybody.
You got it. So thank you so much for being on our show today. And let us know how you like the show. And if you have any guests or topics that you'd like to suggest, we'd appreciate them.
I will certainly do so.
All questions are welcomed, and all of our guests may be emailed with your questions or concerns as well. And Carolyn has just given you hers, and we'll put it up on the website. This show is for the public and, most importantly, for real estate agents who do not have a source for land education. It's free. All shows are downloaded on after their broadcast. Rodney, when do we broadcast?
Well, we'll broadcast this show this coming Saturday morning from 7 to 8 o'clock a.m. And if you download the Simple Radio app, you can carry us anywhere you go and listen to some great beach and oldies music, and also your show on Saturday morning.
And what, we've been nominated 5 years in a row?
5 years in a row, yes. For
that's
Station
the whole
of the
East
year.
Coast, right?
Yes, that's
wow,
right.
Wow, congratulations.
Yeah, we haven't
that's
won it yet.
Wonderful.
Yeah, we haven't won it, but, you know, that's a good honor there, to be nominated
it
5 years
really
in a row.
Is.
Yeah.
It's
well,
quite
Rodney, I'm going to be thinking about your litigation. You email me and let me know what happened.
I'll do that.
Thank you so much.
You're due for a win.
Yeah, I know. Thank you. I'm glad somebody sees it my way.
Hey, maybe you can get Carolyn up here to help you out.
Yeah. We'll move it to South Carolina.
Yeah, we'll move it to South Carolina. I like it.
Come on. Yeah. Come on now.
Okay. But anyway, my email address is lou@mylandpro.com. My cell phone number is 336-669-1405. Thank you for another great show. See you next week.